Okay, so imagine this. You're enjoying a candy bar,
Huh.
something with pecans, and all of a sudden you bite down on something hard,
Yeah.
and it turns out it's a pecan shell.
Hmm.
Now, most of us, probably just shrug it off like, oh, well,
Right.
but what happens when something like that causes real harm?
Yeah.
That's what we're diving into today, a case that tackled this question. Jackson v. Nestle Beach.
Wow.
It's a story about a broken tooth, a pecan shell, and a legal battle that changed the way we think about, natural stuff in our food.
It's really interesting. What's fascinating about this case is that it kind of forced the courts to grapple with the changing landscape of food production, like how things are made and what consumers expect these days. It really wasn't just about this one incident. It was about like a shift in legal thinking, which has had ripple effects throughout the whole food industry.
So let's start with the basics. Back in 1988, Elsie Jackson bought a can of Katydids, those chocolate-covered pecan clusters.
Yeah.
And she ended up breaking a tooth on a pecan shell that was in the candy.
Right. So she sued Nestle Beach, the company that makes Katydids.
Yeah, and Nestle Beach's defense was interesting. They used something called the Foreign Natural Doctrine, which basically says that food makers aren't responsible for injuries caused by stuff that naturally occurs in the food.
Huh.
So they were saying that since pecan shells are a natural part of pecans, they weren't liable for her injury.
So it's kind of like saying, hey, you should expect a few stems in your cherry pie, or maybe a bone in your fish fillet. It makes sense in a way, right? But the court had to decide if this doctrine was still relevant, with how much food processing has changed.
Exactly. The Illinois Supreme Court basically had to decide which legal principle would be used for this type of case going forward. So on the one hand, you have the Foreign Natural Doctrine, with its roots in a much older way of thinking about food. And on the other, you have what's called the reasonable expectation test, which focuses on what a consumer would reasonably expect to find in a food, regardless of if it's naturally occurring or not. So can you break down those two ideas a bit further? What exactly does the Foreign Natural Doctrine mean, and how is it different from the reasonable expectation test?
Okay, so let's start with the foreign natural doctrine. It's based on the idea that some level of natural stuff in food is expected. Like imagine biting into a cherry pie and finding a cherry pit. Most people wouldn't think that was unusual or dangerous.
Right.
That's the kind of thing this doctrine was made to address. But as food processing got more sophisticated, this doctrine started to face some problems.
Because now we have companies taking out those natural elements from a lot of foods. Like most cherry-flavored things these days don't even have real cherries in them, let alone pits.
Yeah, that's a great example. And that's where the reasonable expectation test comes in. It kind of shifts the focus away from what the ingredient is and more towards what the customer is reasonably expecting to find in the food. So if you're eating something processed where those natural parts have been taken out or minimized, then it's reasonable to think you won't find them.
So like a cherry pit in a cherry pie might be natural, but a cherry pit in like a jar of maraschino cherries might not be.
Exactly. Context is important. And in this case, Jackson v. Nestle Beach, the court had to decide if a consumer would reasonably expect to find a pecan shell in a processed candy, even though pecan shells are naturally part of pecans.
And what did they decide? Was Nestle Beach off the hook because of the Foreign Natural Doctrine? Or did the court agree with Jackson and her broken tooth?
Well, the Illinois Supreme Court sided with Jackson. They decided that the foreign natural doctrine was outdated and didn't really reflect how food is processed these days. They basically said that a consumer wouldn't reasonably expect to find a pecan shell in a candy bar, even though, yeah, pecan shells are naturally part of pecans. They argued that manufacturers have a responsibility to make sure their products are safe to eat, even if the potential problems come from naturally occurring things.
So this was a big win for Jackson and a huge shift in legal thinking that affected the whole food industry.
For sure. The court adopting the reasonable expectation test sent a message to food makers. They couldn't just say that something was natural to get out of liability. They had to think about what customers would reasonably expect to find and take steps to make sure it was safe, even if that meant doing more than what was traditionally considered enough.
But I bet not everyone was happy about this new standard, right?
Yeah?
There were probably some strong opinions on the other side.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There was some pushback. Justice Heiple actually wrote a dissenting opinion arguing that this new reasonable expectation test would lead to more lawsuits and be unfair to food companies.
This is where it gets really interesting. What were Heiple's specific concerns, and how were they different from what the majority thought?
Well, Justice Heiple was worried that this change to the reasonable expectation test would mean a lot more lawsuits, even in cases where manufacturers had been careful. He felt like it was putting too much on businesses, which could mean higher costs for consumers, and maybe even some products disappearing from the market.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It makes you think about keeping things fair for both consumers and businesses. Did other people agree with Heiple?
Oh, yeah. His dissent definitely resonated with some who felt that the reasonable expectation test was too subjective and hard to apply consistently. You know, they argued that it could make manufacturers uncertain and they might hesitate to introduce new products or ingredients because they're afraid of being sued.
So are we talking about like a chilling effect on innovation in the food industry?
Exactly. Like if companies are always worried about getting sued, they might not take risks and try new things, and that could end up limiting choices for consumers.
It's like you want to protect people, but you also don't want to stop progress or make food so expensive that people can't afford it. It sounds like this case started a much bigger conversation about how the legal system shapes what we eat.
Absolutely. The Jackson v. Nestle Beach case wasn't just about one dispute. You know, it made us face some basic questions about safe eat responsibility and how consumers and the food industry relate to each other. And we're still talking about these questions today as new food technologies come out and what consumers expect changes.
I think it's easy to get caught up in the legal stuff and forget that these cases affect all of us in real life. When you're at the store and see all those warning labels on food packages, that's because of cases like this one.
That's so true. It reminds us that these legal battles aren't just abstract ideas. They actually shape the products we buy, the information we get, and the choices we make as consumers.
I'm curious about what other states did after the Illinois Supreme Court's decision. Did other courts use the reasonable expectation test too, or did some stick with the foreign natural doctrine?
Well, it wasn't the same everywhere. Some states like California and New York were already using the reasonable expectation test before the Jackson decision. So for them, it was like confirming what they were already doing.
So it seems like they were already focused on protecting consumers.
Yeah. In a way, they had realized that the foreign natural doctrine was getting outdated and had already shifted to an approach that put consumers first. But other states kept following the foreign natural doctrine, at least for a while.
So we ended up with different legal standards across the country.
Yeah, and that made things complicated. Imagine a food company trying to sell a product everywhere when the rules are different in different states. From a legal and business point of view, it was a mess.
Sounds like a nightmare for companies trying to figure it all out. I'm curious about how this case changed, how the food industry does quality control and product labeling. Did companies do anything different after this legal shift?
Oh, for sure. A lot of food companies started looking at their processes again to try and minimize the risk of these natural things ending up in their products. And they got more careful about how they marketed their products too, being careful not to emphasize how natural their ingredients were if there was still a risk of finding those unavoidable bits and pieces.
And that's probably why we see so many warning labels now, right? Things like may contain nuts or bones may be present.
You got it. Warning labels became a normal way to deal with liability and tell consumers about possible risks. Even if a company did everything right, a warning label could help to put some of the responsibility on the consumer.
It's interesting how this whole thing about a pecan shell and a candy bar ended up changing so much. It shows how even small legal fights can sometimes change how entire industries work and how we as consumers deal with the things we buy every day.
You're right. And this brings us to the core of the debate. Does using the reasonable expectation test actually protect consumers the right amount? Or have we gone too far in trying to shield people from any possible risk, even ones that might just be a natural part of certain foods?
That's a tough one. I mean, people should feel confident that the food they're buying is safe. They shouldn't have to worry about breaking a tooth on a pecan shell or choking on a fish bone if those things could have been avoided. But we don't want to create a system where companies are so afraid of getting sued that they stop trying new things or make food so expensive that most people can't afford it.
It's a tricky balance, and the answer might not be the same for every food or every situation. It depends. For instance, people probably expect different things from a fancy meal at a nice restaurant compared to grabbing something quick at a fast food place.
Speaking of expectations, you mentioned that famous hot coffee case Labeck v. McDonald's earlier. Everyone knows about it, usually as an example of a silly lawsuit. But I'm guessing there's more to it than that, and maybe it connects to this reasonable expectations idea in a surprising way.
You're totally right. People often misunderstand and misrepresent that hot coffee case. They focus on the idea of suing over spilled coffee. But if we think about it in terms of reasonable expectations, it becomes a really interesting example that tells us a lot about how we see risk responsibility and whether companies are accountable.
Okay, tell me more. Let's get into the details of that case and see how it connects to our discussion about Jackson v. Nestle Beach. I think our listeners will find it pretty eye-opening. Yeah, it is a tricky balance. And, the answer might not be the same for every food or every situation. It
Yeah.
depends on the context. Like, people probably have different expectations for, a fancy meal at a nice restaurant compared to grabbing a quick bite at a fast food place.
Right. And thinking about those different expectations, you mentioned that famous hot coffee case, Liebeck v. McDonald's earlier. And, everyone's heard about it usually as like an example of a frivolous lawsuit. But I'm thinking there's more to it than that, and maybe it connects to this reasonable expectations idea in like a surprising way.
Oh, you're absolutely right. People get that hot coffee case wrong all the time.
Yeah.
They focus on the idea of suing over spilled coffee.
Yeah.
But if we think about it through, the lens of reasonable expectations, it actually becomes a really interesting example that tells us a lot about how we view risk responsibility and, corporate accountability.
Yeah. Okay. I'm all ears. Let's get into the details of that case and see how it connects to what we were talking about with Jackson v. Nestle Beach. I think our listeners will find it pretty interesting. Okay. So let's rewind back to 1992. Stella Liebeck, this 79-year-old woman, bought a cup of coffee from a McDonald's drive-thru. And while she was parking her car, she spilled the coffee on her lap and ended up with third-degree burns that needed skin grafts and, a long and painful recovery. So she sued McDonald's, saying the coffee was way too hot.
And that's when all the media went crazy, right? People were like, "You're suing over spilled coffee." It became like a symbol of frivolous lawsuits and, litigation being out of control.
Exactly. But there's a lot more to it than just those headlines. Liebeck's lawsuit wasn't just about spilling the coffee, it was about how hot the coffee was when they served it to her.
So it wasn't just that she was clumsy. She was saying that McDonald's was negligent because they served something that was dangerous.
Exactly. Her lawyers argued that McDonald's coffee was brewed at a temperature that was way higher than what the industry usually does, and that it could seriously burn people.
So she was saying that McDonald's didn't meet a reasonable standard of safety, even though they were technically giving people what they expected, hot coffee.
Right. And they actually had evidence that McDonald's had gotten a bunch of complaints about how hot their coffee was even before Liebeck's case happened. This suggested that McDonald's knew it was a problem, but didn't really do anything to fix it.
So it sounds like the reasonable expectation test could apply here too. Like, even though people expect hot coffee to be hot, there's a limit to how hot is safe. And if McDonald's knew their coffee was hotter than it should be and it had burned people before, then maybe they are liable.
Yeah, you got it. That's the main legal question here. Liebeck's case was all about proving that McDonald's hadn't done their duty to keep customers safe by serving coffee that was too dangerous. And McDonald's argued back, saying that everyone knows hot coffee can burn you and that it was mostly Liebeck's fault for spilling it. They said they were just giving people what they wanted, hot coffee.
So that classic legal fight, personal responsibility versus corporate accountability. And at the heart of it is this idea of reasonable expectations. So how did the jury decide?
Well, even though a lot of people thought it was a frivolous lawsuit, the jury sided with Liebeck. They said McDonald's was responsible for her injuries and gave her a bunch of money in damages, though the judge did lower the amount later on.
Wow. That's a big win for her, considering all the negative attention she got.
Yeah.
What does that tell us about the reasonable expectation test in the legal world?
It shows that this idea isn't just for cases about natural stuff and food. It can be used for any product or service where there's a question about whether a company has met a reasonable standard of safety, even if the risks are well known.
So even though people know hot coffee can burn you, McDonald's was still held responsible because they didn't take reasonable steps to make it safer. It's a good reminder that companies have to do more than just give people what they expect. They also have to make safety a priority and try to prevent harm.
That's a crucial point. The hot coffee case, just like the Jackson v. Nestle Beach case, shows how what consumers expect and corporate accountability are changing. And as we keep looking into this topic, we'll see how these legal fights have changed the products we buy, the information we get, and the choices we make every day.
It's been so interesting. We talked about pecan shells and candy bars, scalding hot coffee, and the laws about product liability. But how does all this legal stuff actually affect us in our everyday lives?
That's the big question, isn't it? These legal decisions don't just exist in some bubble. They have real effects on how businesses work and how we as consumers deal with the market.
I think we sometimes forget that laws aren't just abstract ideas. They're supposed to deal with real problems and shape how we interact with each other and companies.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And when it comes to food and product liability, these cases show that there's always this tension between what individuals are responsible for and what companies are accountable for. On the one hand, we have to be careful and use common sense when we're eating or using products. Right, we can't expect to be totally protected from every possible risk. We had to take some responsibility for ourselves.
Exactly. But on the other hand, companies have to make sure that their products are safe enough for how they're supposed to be used, and that they give clear warnings about any possible dangers.
So it's about finding a balance. We need to be aware of the risks that come with certain things, but we also have a right to expect that companies are doing what they can to protect us from getting hurt.
Exactly. And the legal system is really important for setting those standards and making sure both people and companies are held accountable when those standards aren't met.
This brings up another interesting point. We've been talking about the reasonable expectation standard mostly with food, but this applies to all kinds of things, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Think about toys, appliances, cars, even amusement park rides. For all of these things, there's this basic understanding of what's considered reasonably safe and what risks a consumer should expect.
So this idea goes way beyond finding a pecan shell in your candy bar. It affects everything we buy. It really does. And as technology keeps changing and there are new products and services, the whole question of reasonable expectations gets even more complicated. We're always pushing the limits of what's possible, and the law has to keep up with the new challenges and risks.
This has been a really interesting deep dive into product liability, consumer expectations, and how the legal system is changing. But I think the most important thing I've learned is that this isn't just about legal theory or what companies do. It's about how we interact with the world around us, the choices we make, and the responsibility we all share.
I totally agree. These cases make us think critically about what we expect our role as consumers and the balance between personal responsibility and corporate accountability. They remind us that the law is always changing to keep up with society and technology.
Well said. This deep dive has definitely given us a lot to think about. As we go about our day, let's remember to be aware and think critically when we're buying things. After all, knowing our rights and understanding our responsibilities is the first step to making the world safer and fairer for everyone.
And on that note, we'll wrap up for today. Until next time, keep those minds curious and keep those questions coming.